Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception, a podcast dedicated to the wide receivers. Are you as confident in your flex as you are in your wide receiver one? I didn't think so. So follow Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From KMOX Sports.
Okay, boys, here we go.
Welcome to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line.
Those big swings, and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Gray Bar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Here we go.
Now, Matt Pauly on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, man, let's get going here.
Here we go.
Let's go.
On a Monday evening, we welcome you in to another edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Happy for a full 2 hours tonight as no Cardinals baseball. They have the day off. They are going to get back at tomorrow when they match up against the Cincinnati Reds, opening up a midweek series. As always, if you want to join us on the program, if you want to comment on anything that we're talking about, you can do so by calling, texting, or tweeting. If you call or text, the phone number 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. Or you can tweet at me at Matt Pauly on air, MattPauley on air. That's how you get in contact with the program today. What a show we've got. This is going to be a fun one today. In about 10 minutes, we are going to be joined by Bernie Miklas. Of course, you've heard him all over KMOX since he officially rejoined the station, what was it, a couple weeks ago or so? But just with Cardinals baseball and the lack of sports open lines, we have not yet had the opportunity to have Bernie on this show. I've texted with him a little bit, but when we say hello to each other in about 10 minutes, that's going to be the first time that I've gotten the opportunity to speak with Bernie, somebody who, like most people in St. Louis, you read him a lot, you've listened to him a lot, and now we're so lucky to have him back here at KMOX and rejoining Sports Open Line, of course, a show that he was hosting not all that long ago, a few years back, but great to have Bernie Miklas on the program today. Other guests that we're going to have on later on this hour, Dan Reardon, KMOX golf editor. We're going to break down what went down with the Ascension Charity Classic. Just another spectacular big event weekend for St. Louis and St. Louis sports fans. The golf was great. The event was great. And we'll talk with Dan about that as much as what actually happened on the golf course, just everything that took place with the weekend, which has turned into one of the big weekends in sports every year here in the St. Louis area. And then in the 7 o'clock hour, we're going to do a fair amount of college football. We're going to talk with Missouri football analyst Howard Richards. We'll get his take on just how good the Tigers are. If you're not paying attention, and you should be, Missouri football right now, they are sitting with a number 6 national ranking in the AP poll and a number 8 national ranking in the coaches poll. They are in a really, really good spot. The SEC just absolutely dominating the top of the college football rankings. The AP poll, number 1 Georgia, number 2 Texas, number 4 Alabama, number 5 Ole Miss, number 6 Missouri, number 7 Tennessee. The only non-SEC school in the top 7 in the AP poll is number 3 Ohio State. It is such a loaded league right now, and Missouri is right there in the middle of it. And how about Illinois football coming off a really good win against Kansas this past weekend, a Kansas team that was ranked as they were matched up against each other. Illinois is now 2-0. We are looking forward to talking with Glenn Kinley coming up next hour. He is the sports director at WCIA-TV. They're in Champaign, and we'll talk with him about the Fighting Illini in a few minutes. I guess a little more than a few minutes, about 7:35 next hour, but you get what I'm talking about. Cardinals baseball, rough weekend, just in the sense that they lost 2 out of 3, and we've said it over and over and over. I mean, playoff hopes for this team have been bleak for a while, and they get bleaker and bleaker and bleaker every single time they lose a game. That is exponentially true when they lose a series. And that's what happens. And yesterday was a disappointing day. I don't think we can't paint a rosy picture at all on what happened yesterday, because you think about what the Cardinals had done recently. That 4-game series against the Padres, they lost the first 2, won the second 2 to split. That 3-game series against the Yankees, they lost the first game, won the next 2, took the series. Next series against the Brewers, lost the first 1, won the next 2, took the series. So they lost the first game against the Mariners. They came back with kind of a hard-fought, gritty win in Game 2. A Pedro Páez swing of the bat was the difference in that game, where they just could not collect many hits. And then that set them up for yesterday, which is essentially a must win. And unfortunately for Miles Michaelis and the Cardinals, they were just never really given the opportunity to compete in that game. Michaelis takes the mound, and it's 5-0 before you know it. And that the air is just let out in that moment, as I think some Cardinals fans have been grasping to the hope that maybe this team would find a way to do something miraculous down the stretch. And to do that, you can't lose series. And Michaelis, who, like, his overall numbers are just not great. Like, it's well documented, second worst ERA among qualified starters in Major League Baseball. The numbers have gotten worse as the season has gone along. The thing about Michaelis, though, is every once in a while, like every 4, 5, 6 starts, I don't know, maybe, and sometimes it's 2 starts in a row, he puts up really good numbers. He has a great start. And you think to yourself, okay, is this the real Miles Michaelis? Is this who this guy is? And I think in some ways that has protected his job, because it's not like he's gone out there and had 12 straight bad starts or anything like that. He sprinkles in these really good starts. And as a Cardinal fan yesterday, you're hoping that that's a sprinkle yesterday, that is one of those really good starts, and Cardinals find a way to beat the Mariners and kind of sort of in a way remain fringe contenders if some other things can happen in front of them. And instead, in a game that was truly a must-win game, Michaelis was just not able to execute the pitches that he needed to execute. Seattle, a bad offensive club, had no problem looking good against him yesterday. And with all that, it was not a good day, and they end up losing 2 out of 3. So a lot to get to today, including a conversation with Bernie Miklas. He joins us in just a moment on a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that will make or break your fantasy roster, wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that really matter. We do the work so that you can just make smart decisions. Sit back and amaze your friends. Your wide receiver one won't change, but it's the nitty-gritty, it's the flex, and the waiver wire pickups. That's where your league is won or lost. So follow Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
So I feel like I'm a little late to the party here. If you've listened to KMOX much over the last couple weeks, it has been a lot of Bernie Miklas, which is very awesome. He officially rejoined the station just with Cardinals games and everything else that results in us not having a lot of sports open lines during the summer. It took a little while to get him on, but he joins us right now. Bernie, I've told you this via DM and text. I'm just so jazzed up to be able to talk to you as somebody who grew up loving sports. And I think about the people who have impacted my love of sports. And that starts with my dad. But then when you get into media members and growing up reading you and listening to you and hearing you host this very show and hopping in the car with my dad and listening to you host the show, it's pretty darn cool to be able to talk to you.
Well, Matt, I'm really happy to be working with you. I mean, I think you've done a terrific job since coming over to KMOX, and I know you were thrilled to do it. And we, for obvious reasons, have not had a chance to do anything together because I was working somewhere else and all that. And this is just a wonderful thing. I not only reconnect with a lot of friends that I already had at KMOX, but now I get to connect with you, someone I respect and like very much. Now I get a chance to know you on the air, and it's a great thing. It really is. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to reminisce just a little bit here before we get into what's going on, because you're back on Sports Open Line. This is a show that you were hosting previously. What does this show, specifically this show, you've talked a lot about what KMOX means to you. What does Sports Open Line mean to you?
First of all, it was huge in my career as far as promoting my career. When I came to town, you know, Mr. Bob Hyland, the legendary, iconic leader of KMOX, he put me on the air. He didn't know who I was. A couple people said, put this guy on the air. I had some guy with a funny Polish last name. Nobody knew who I was by not only writing for the Post-Dispatch, obviously, but by getting on KMOX and Sports Open Line, having that platform, people got a chance to get to know me. I had a chance to work with legends like Bob Costas, Joe Buck, Jack. Well, actually, Joe Buck later on, Jack Buck, Dan Dierdorf, and so many others. I've always enjoyed my time with Ron Jacober and Tom Ackerman, and on and on and on and on and on. And so it means a great deal to me. And we don't have time to get into the memories. I just have some incredible memories, though, of some of those experiences. So this is an iconic program. I mean, I don't care what anybody says. KMOX is still the most prestigious radio station in this market. And as in terms of a sports station, it is still something that is nationally revered and respected and Hall of Fame caliber. So I'm honored to be reassociated with KMOX.
How did you go about making the decision on, because you would have a column and it'd be in the paper the next day and it's must read stuff. How would you go about not giving it all away, I guess, in your show the night before?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, to use a cliche, you know, there's got to be a little separation of church and state. And so, yeah, I had two employers, but I always felt like, you know, the Post-Dispatch didn't have to like grant me permission to do radio for KMOX. So I always kept that in mind. I honestly don't recall any big conflicts like that. Now, if I was on KMOX and I knew that I had some kind of breaking story the next day in the Post-Dispatch, that would put me in a tough situation and I could not violate that because the Post-Dispatch, that's their story, the way I look at it. But I never was really put in that situation. And maybe if I was, because I was fortunate to break a lot of stories back in the day. Even if I was, let's put it this way, maybe I would just hide. So KMOX couldn't get me on the air at that time. I don't think that happened either, but I'm just having some fun with it.
Last reflective question. You at STL today had your message board, the Bernie's Press Box, and that was in a time period where things like that didn't exist, and then you started interacting with people. I remember going on that and clicking on your name so I could go read all the posts that you had written, just responding to other people. Now today you're on Twitter and you respond to people and talk to people. You're doing the exact same stuff in a different place. Is it fun for you to know that you were way ahead of the curve when it came to that sort of stuff, specifically with the Bernie's Press Box?
I'm really glad you mentioned that because I was very proud of that. Like I thought that even getting into radio at the time I did, like I started out as a real young guy in WBAL in Baltimore, which was the Orioles flagship station. Their general manager took a liking to me and put me on the air like once a week, sometimes two nights a week. I'd be a fill-in host. And at that time, there weren't many like sports writers doing radio. And I always looked at this as a parallel career. I always did. And so, you know, that's why I worked at KMOX for so long. I worked for KRLD in Dallas when I covered the Cowboys for the Dallas Morning News. So I've always believed it was important to sort of spread out and get busy on as many platforms as I could. And this was before the internet really became a huge thing. But to answer your question, I'm just giving you the background there. Bernie's Press Box was totally something different. I had sports writers all around the country saying, are you crazy? Why are you doing that? People are they can get to you and rip you and put you on the spot. And I'm like, well, that's good. I should be held accountable. Yeah, sometimes it was a little rough, but I was proud of the fact that I would venture into the jungle and whatever would be. And I'm doing that a lot now, and I'm not using this as a backdoor way to promote my YouTube channel, but I have been just blown away by how much response there's been to my YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/@TheBernieShow. just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of comments pour in, and it reminds me of the old Bernie's press box, because I can't like sit and respond to every comment because I don't have the time, but I do it late at night and I try to get to a bunch of them. So I'm interacting with people again in a way that was reminiscent of that old Bernie's press box.
You've got multiple videos a day, a lot of days on your YouTube, and your afternoon, late afternoon video on Friday after we got news that Gary LaRock had announced his retirement, I thought it was really good because you laid out what this could mean for the organization moving forward and how winds of change are coming, that was not just a guy all of a sudden waking up and saying he was going to retire. John Mozeliak was on Sports on a Sunday Morning yesterday with Tom Ackerman, and he indicated that changes are coming. I think if nothing else, it feels like Cardinals fans should at least feel comfortable that next year is not going to look the way it is looking this year from a decision-making process.
Well, there's definitely going to be changes. The only question I have, and I think it's the question we all have, is what will be the magnitude of those changes? And I don't think, for example, if Bill DeWitt chooses to change the farm system around and maybe still retains Heim Bloom as in an advisory capacity, and he sort of rolls with what they've had in place for a long time, I don't think the fans would be happy with that. And it's not my job to advise Bill DeWitt in terms of fan relations, but we all know that it's been a rough spell by Cardinal standards in that area. And a lot of people are, you know, upset or angry, disillusioned, disappointed, whatever you want to call it. And I think people who are feeling that way really want to see major change, not kind of window dressing change. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And to your point about Heim Bloom in your video on Friday, why? This guy's not going to stick around to be a special advisor in all likelihood. You look at his tenure at Tampa and what he did and the reputation he had prior to Boston, and then he dealt with a meddling owner with the Red Sox. So I kind of give him a free pass on what happened in Boston. This guy is spending a year. His family is still in Boston. He's able to kind of reconnect with them while doing some stuff with the Cardinals. But at some point, this is a really sharp baseball guy that's going to want to jump back in full bore with an organization. And the Cardinals have an opportunity to keep him around.
Yeah, he wasn't going to like move away from his family or spend a lot of time away from his family just to sort of be a guy who's a consultant. I mean, you know, he wants another job running a baseball operation. And here's the thing about him that people should understand. If we were looking for a quote fit for Bill DeWitt Jr., like what would we be looking for if we were identifying candidates? Well, Bill DeWitt hired Jeff Luhnow at a time where people were like, well, who? He's not even a baseball guy. Bill DeWitt had a great vision. He said, we need a different model. We need to really rely on our draft and development. And if we have our own pipeline flowing with young talent, which is cheaper, then we will have money to spend on expensive free agents or to give our veterans contract extensions. So when he fired Walt Jocketty and before he choosing his next general manager, you know, John Mozeliak was elevated to that GM job. But before that, Bill DeWitt tried to hire Chris Antonetti, who was like second in command with the Cleveland Guardians. And Chris Antonetti decided to stay in Cleveland because he was assured he would become the top guy if he just held on for a while. So he hired Luhnow. He tried to hire Antonetti. What are those things? And he brings Heim Bloom in as an advisor now. So what do those things all have in common? Well, they all represent the model that Bill DeWitt really likes. It matches his philosophy. And some people will say, well, what you're trying to say, Bernie, is he's cheap. He doesn't want to spend money. That has nothing to do with it. He wants a more efficient payroll model. He wants to get that pipeline flowing. They need to do a better job in their minor league system. So if he in fact pursues Heim Bloom, it makes perfect sense given his own history. I'm talking about Bill DeWitt and what he has chosen for leadership through the years. The Luhnow thing was way ahead of its time, and it was a tremendous success. And he really wants to have a model where they are thriving with their farm system again. Everything falls into place after that. And, you know, you don't have to spend $190 million, $250 million to win. You can win if you're smart with your payroll decisions. And I've always said I've never wanted Bill DeWitt to prove to me that he's stupid by throwing money around that doesn't pay off. Like, what good is that? So he needs to get back to that model where they're really, really smart about how they spend. But most of all, having that talent pipeline pumping again with their minor league system.
If the conversation does go down the line with Bloom, though, I have to think that he's going to require some expenditures of the organization. I spent 7 years doing Brewers postgame, and I watched what Milwaukee did in terms of investing in player development, the technology that they use in the pitching lab, the stop-motion technology, the staffs and field coordinators. I mean, they are a robust organization from a data and technology standpoint, but also from a human standpoint, and that's something that I'm sure Chaim Bloom can very quickly identify, because anybody can identify that, but there's going to have to be assurances, I would think, that the organization is willing to go down that path.
Yeah, because if they brought him in to conduct this audit, and it's very comprehensive, it is very thorough, he has looked at everything, but I know Bill DeWitt and John Mozeliak want to have a much better player development system than they've had in recent years. Chaim Bloom, that happens to be one of his areas of expertise. You know, he signed on with the Tampa Bay Rays as an intern in 2005. And in 2008, they put him in charge of the minor league system. And that's when they really started to take off. I mean, they had a huge edge on a lot of organizations, more wealthier organizations. The drafting, signing players out of the international market, setting up operations in different countries, and also just making sure they drafted well, and they also could sort of develop a really good instinct about pitchers, identifying pitchers. What can we do to help them? How can we change them? And when Tom Verducci of Sports Illustrated wrote a glowing piece about how Tampa Bay continues to do this, like, in, for example, in 2019, they won 96 games with the 30th payroll in baseball, $60 million. And part of it was because they had pitching. Tom Verducci wrote a tribute to Chaim Bloom and said, there's no organization's better in baseball at drafting, developing, identifying pitching, finding really, really good value for relatively low cost. And I think Chaim Bloom's influence was seen with the Cardinals this year. Like, you know, I'm assuming he said, no, you got to go get Andrew Kittredge. He'll be a bargain for you, which is true. Hey, I was in Boston. This Ryan Fernandez has a nasty slider. He can be really, really good. You should take a chance on him. This is what Chaim Bloom does the best. And I think Cardinals fans should be at ease if, in fact, he's going to be the guy, because it's a great fit for Bill DeWitt, and you have to have that or it's not going to work.
He is Bernie Miklas. You read his columns at ScoopsNetwork.com. You watch his Bernie Show videos at The Bernie Show. That's his YouTube channel. And, of course, follow him on Twitter at B_Miklas. That's his new Twitter account. If you don't follow that one, you only follow the old one. You're like, Bernie hasn't tweeted in a while. Yeah, he has. You just got to get on the new Twitter account. Bernie, this was fun. I really look forward to all of our future conversations. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Matt, anytime at all, even if you're like kind of in an emergency situation, you need some big mouth to fill some time with you, I'm always around. Don't worry about that. Thank you.
I'm a big mouth too, so it works well.
Thanks, take
Bernie.
Care, man.
You bet. That's Bernie Miklas joining us, KMOX sports contributor. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we're going to wrap up the Ascension Charity Classic with Dan Reardon. That's in just a moment. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. One of the great sports weekends in St. Louis just wrapped up, the Ascension Charity Classic. I'll tell you what, St. Louis does such a great job of making this event feel like a really big deal. And then what do you know? We had quite the finish, as Wai Yang was able to finish in a playoff with a win against Bernard Langer. And to talk about that and much, much more about the weekend, we're happy to welcome on KMOX golf editor Dan Reardon, who had fantastic coverage all weekend long of the event, but we're not letting him be done quite yet. He joins us right now here on the Graybar Sports Open Line. Dan, thanks for taking some time. How are you?
Thanks, Matt. And it was a good weekend. Very entertaining weekend in terms of the senior event.
Something struck me that Y.E. Yang said after the event. He said the PGA, speaking of when he beat Tiger Woods back in the 2009 PGA Championship, he said the PGA was a long time ago. Today is very special. It is a Champions Tour event. It's different than the PGA Tour, but what did it mean for him to be able to come away with that victory?
Well, you know, it is 15 years ago that was the case. And the fact is that he had played well the two prior years, top five finishes. I think he was a runner-up last year. So when you get – and he mentioned that there was something about Norwood and its hilly terrain that reminded him of golf back home in Korea. So he felt comfortable in the environment. And, you know, you only go so long without winning. And, and for him, it was – 15 years in this country between wins. So it's easy to see why that would be special. And then, you know, you had this wonderful circumstance, and they had this once before in the first 4 years of this championship. You had three players in the final group, all who were major winners. You had a PGA champion in Yang. You had an Open champion in Stuart Sink. And you had a two-time Masters winner in Bernhard Langer. And if you want to extend that a little bit, in two groups before them, you had Justin Leonard, an Open winner, and Angel Cabrera, a Masters winner and a U.S. Open winner. So you had the Grand Slam of golf represented in the final three groups of this championship. And against that kind of competition, I think players, they're hesitant to admit when they beat somebody who doesn't have much reputation. But they will admit when they beat somebody with some reputation, it means something to them.
Stuart Sink was on an amazing run coming into this. He obviously played well, but comes up just short of the playoff.
Yeah, he really hit one bad shot. He hit his sorry about the beeping noise there. He hit his tee shot on 17, a huge slice right, and he was blocked by trees. He couldn't go under him. He couldn't go over him, and he bogeyed the hole to fall out of the lead. He was actually at 13 under at the time, and then concurrent with that, Yang put it about 4 feet and birdied the hole. So you had that two shot swing, and Y.E. told me after the round was over, he said that was big for him because he went from trailing by a stroke to leading by a stroke. Sometimes you catch a player. Seldom do you pass a player in that circumstance. And then Stewart did not play 18 particularly well. He left his approach shot in the bunker, managed to save a par coming out of the bunker, but he was out of the picture at that time. But then you had this other circumstance. So now we have Y.E. Yang with the lead coming into 18, and 18 has been a hard hole. And suddenly it's a two-man race, and Langer puts it about 12 feet and makes the putt for birdie. And meanwhile, Y.E. has a long birdie putt and then leaves it about 5 feet short and needs to make that to get into the playoffs. So it was a really entertaining final round.
Was there anything unique this weekend about the way the course played, or was it pretty much the way it's always going to play?
I think this course was almost in its prime shape in terms of the firmness of the course. We've had very little rain, so there was a lot of run in the golf course. The rough was long enough to be challenging for the players. And the players do respect this golf course. So, I don't think there was anything unique. You know, last year, Steve Flesh shot 62 on the final day to finish 19 under. Well, you're gonna shoot 19 under sometimes when you can shoot a 62 in the final round. But, you know, let's go to the Bernhard. 67 years old, still limping from Achilles surgery some time ago, and he has 8 birdies and a bogey for a 64. So, I mean, like I said, everything about this tournament and this final round, I just think it's exactly what you hope for in a senior event. You want a good field with big names, and you want big names on the leaderboard at the end.
St. Louis does a great job of supporting events like these. Was it another case of just that? Did you like what you saw from the support of the sports fans in the community?
If I'm being honest, I think that we probably need to have a better turnout from the general public. But that's explainable this year because Ascension knew going into this year that they weren't going to renew the contract. So there were some budget restrictions placed on preparation in terms of promotion of this event. And so I think that the tournament went by pretty much unnoticed until we got very close to the date of the event. So it was good in the sense of the corporate boxes and those kinds of things. But no, I don't think the general public showed up in great numbers.
Forgive me if I don't know if this is out there and I don't know the answer to it. But with that, where do things stand for it moving forward in terms of sponsorship and everything?
Well, that's the good news on Saturday. And this is very last minute, Matt. I'm telling you, this came together within the last 2 weeks. Stiefel stepped up to be the title sponsor, and Compliance Solutions stepped up to be the presenting sponsor and essentially has stayed a part of this championship as a number of other ones, including Worldwide Technologies, and they have a 3-year contract. So we're going to see Senior Golf in St. Louis for the next 3 years, and we know for sure next year it's going to be on basically the same weekend.
It's pretty, and I'm not trying to be a shill for Stiefel, but it is remarkable the support that they give, especially to sports properties in the St. Louis area.
Yeah, as I said, they stepped into this void very late in the game. I'll give you an idea how late in the game. They had a press conference or a presentation on Saturday afternoon where they announced the new title sponsorship. They don't have a logo. And I've never seen a release on a tournament where they didn't have the logo to display to you. But that's how quickly this came together. And their team has been a part.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception, a podcast dedicated to the wide receivers. Are you as confident in your flex as you are in your wide receiver one? I didn't think so. So follow Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get it on a Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. One of the great sports weekends in St. Louis just wrapped up, the Ascension Charity Classic. I'll tell you what, St. Louis does such a great job of making this event feel like a really big deal. And then what do you know? We had quite the finish as Wai Yang was able to finish in a playoff with a win against Bernard Langer. And talk about that and much, much more about the weekend, we're happy to welcome on KMOX golf editor Dan Reardon, who had fantastic coverage all weekend long of the event, but we're not letting him be done quite yet. He joins us right now here on the Graybar Sports Open Line. Dan, thanks for taking some time. How are you?
Thanks, Matt. It was a good weekend. Very entertaining weekend in terms of the senior event.
Something struck me that Wai Yang said after the event. He said the PGA, speaking of when he beat Tiger Woods back in the 2009 PGA Championship, he said the PGA was a long time ago. Today is very special. It is a Champions Tour event. It's different than the PGA Tour, but what did it mean for him to be able to come away with that victory?
Well, you know, it is 15 years ago that was the case. And the fact is that he had played well the two prior years, top five finishes. I think he was a runner-up last year. So when you get – and he mentioned that there was something about Norwood and its hilly terrain that reminded him of golf back home in Korea. So he felt comfortable in the environment. And, you know, you only go so long without winning. And, and for him, it was – 15 years in this country between wins. So it's easy to see why that would be special. And then you had this wonderful circumstance, and they had this once before in the first 4 years of this championship. You had three players in the final group, all who were major winners. You had a PGA champion in Yang. You had an Open champion in Stuart Sink, and you had a two-time Masters winner in Bernhard Langer. And if you want to extend that a little bit, in two groups before them, you had Justin Leonard, an Open winner, and Angel Cabrera, a Masters winner and a U.S. Open winner. So you had the Grand Slam of golf represented in the final three groups of this championship. And against that kind of competition, I think players they're hesitant to admit when they beat somebody who doesn't have much reputation, but they will admit when they beat somebody with some reputation, it means something to them.
Stuart Cink was on an amazing run coming into this. He obviously played well, but comes up just short of the playoff.
Yeah, he really hit one bad shot. He hit his sorry about the beeping noise there. He hit his tee shot on 17, a huge slice right, and he was blocked by trees. He couldn't go under him. He couldn't go over him, and he bogeyed the hole to fall out of the lead. He was actually at 13 under at the time, and then concurrent with that, Yang put it about 4 feet and birdied the hole. So you had that two shot swing, and Y.E. told me after the round was over, he said that was big for him because he went from trailing by a stroke to leading by a stroke. Sometimes you catch a player. Seldom do you pass a player in that circumstance. And then Stewart did not play 18 particularly well. He left his approach shot in the bunker, managed to save par coming out of the bunker, but he was out of the picture at that time. But then you had this other circumstance. So now we have Y.E. Yang with the lead coming into 18, and 18 has been a hard hole. And suddenly it's a two-man race, and Langer puts it about 12 feet and makes the putt for birdie. And meanwhile, Y.E. has a long birdie putt and then leaves it about 5 feet short and needs to make that to get into the playoffs. So it was a really entertaining final round.
Was there anything unique this weekend about the way the course played, or was it pretty much the way it's always going to play?
I think this course was almost in its prime shape in terms of the firmness of the course. We've had very little rain, so there was a lot of run in the golf course. The rough was long enough to be challenging for the players. And the players do respect this golf course. So, I don't think there was anything unique. You know, last year, Steve Flesh shot 62 on the final day to finish 19 under. Well, you're gonna shoot 19 under sometimes when you can shoot a 62 in the final round. But, you know, let's go to Dale Earnhardt. 67 years old, still limping from Achilles surgery some time ago, and he has 8 birdies and a bogey for a 64. So, I mean, like I said, everything about this tournament and this final round, I just think it's exactly what you hope for in a senior event. You want a good field with big names, and you want big names on the leaderboard at the end.
St. Louis does a great job of supporting events like these. Was it another case of just that? Did you like what you saw from the support of the sports fans in the community?
If I'm being honest, I think that we probably need to have a better turnout from the general public. But that's explainable this year because Ascension knew going into this year that they weren't going to renew the contract. So there were some budget restrictions placed on preparation in terms of promotion of this event. And so I think that the tournament went by pretty much unnoticed until we got very close to the date of the event. So it was good in the sense of the corporate boxes and those kinds of things. But no, I don't think the general public showed up in great numbers.
Forgive me if I don't know if this is out there and I don't know the answer to it. But with that, where do things stand for it moving forward in terms of sponsorship and everything?
Well, that's the good news on Saturday. And this is very last minute, Matt. I'm telling you, this came together within the last 2 weeks. Stiefel stepped up to be the title sponsor, and Compliance Solutions stepped up to be the presenting sponsor, and Ascension has stayed a part of this championship as a number of other ones, including Worldwide Technologies, and they have a 3-year contract. So we're going to see senior golf in St. Louis for the next 3 years, and we know for sure next year it's going to be on basically the same weekend.
It's pretty, and I'm not trying to be a shill for Stiefel, but it is remarkable the support that they give, especially to sports properties in the St. Louis area.
Yeah, as I said, they stepped into this void very late in the game. I'll give you an idea how late in the game. They had a press conference or a presentation on Saturday afternoon where they announced the new title sponsorship. They don't have a logo. And I've never seen a release on a tournament where they didn't have the logo to display to you. But that's how quickly this came together. And their team has been a part of the Saturday event, the Classic Challenge, or the Ascension Charity Classic Challenge, where they brought the celebrities in. The first year they brought Nicklaus in, and they've been a part of that every year. So they've been involved with this championship for a number of years, and they saw a need and they stepped up and took it. And like I said, keep in mind Compliance Solution, which has a St. Louis CEO, is in the mix, and they're a St. Louis company. And all credit to Ascension, even though they're going a different direction, they stayed on board.
A $2.1 million purse, is that, does that number need to go up to make sure that you continue to have the type of fields that you want?
No, I don't think that's the case, Matt. You know, one of the things that caught my attention was Justin Leonard, in his pre-tournament press conference, was asked about coming to St. Louis. And Justin said, you know, we liked coming to St. Louis, a great city, great sports town, all that. He said, but we don't play in large metropolitan areas with our tour. We're more likely to be found in Nebraska and Iowa and states that don't have the heavy populations. And so they look very fondly at playing in a community where, you know, it does have a Major League Baseball team and a National Hockey League team and a soccer franchise and all those kinds of things going on at the same time and auto racing. So I don't think the purse is a make or break it. But I will tell you there's a bit of good news if Keegan Bradley, the Ryder Cup captain, lives up to his promise, because last year the field was hurt because I believe there were three vice captains on the Ryder Cup team who would have been in the field and weren't. I know Steve Stricker was one of those. And next year is a Ryder Cup year. But Keegan Bradley has already said his intention is to go younger with vice captains. So if he doesn't suck out the premier names on the senior circuit, we could have a very good field there as well next year. The one player that's hard to get into the field is a former winner, Padraig Harrington, because the Irish Open tends to be very close to this championship.
He is Dan Reardon. Always does a fantastic job covering golf for KMOX, but was right there this weekend for the Ascension Charity Classic. Dan, thank you so much for the time and all the work all weekend long.
Enjoyed it, Matt.
Awesome. Very good. That's Dan Reardon joining us on the program. We'll take a break. We'll come back, and we'll talk a little Cardinals baseball. We'll do that here over the next couple segments before we jump into college football full bore in the next hour. We've got a very busy program tonight. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Starting to wrap up hour number one of the program. Coming up in hour two, we'll talk a lot of college football. Missouri, Illinois, both getting wins over the weekend. Missouri up to number six in the AP poll. Illinois, they got a win against a ranked Kansas team, and they're receiving votes in each poll. So good things happening for college football teams in the area. And we're going to talk with a couple guests about each of those coming up next hour. I'll reiterate what I said earlier, and we'll after the 7 o'clock news, we'll open up the phone line and the text line for a little bit if you want to get in here on Cardinals baseball. But that was not good yesterday. And when you've got so much on the line, and again, I know when I start talking like this, I immediately get tweets and text messages about, like, what are you doing talking about the playoffs? This team is not in playoff contention. Like, I understand where the team is at. And by me talking about it, I am not trying to create this false hope. I will say over and over and over that it is clearly a very bleak situation when it comes to them being a playoff team. But they're not mathematically eliminated yet. So until they're mathematically eliminated, we can continue to talk about what the path might be, no matter how unlikely the path is. And it is an incredibly unlikely path. And losing yesterday and just not even giving the team the opportunity to win. Like, they didn't play well on Saturday. What, they had the two hits or whatever? And, you know, Pedro Páez hits the home run, and that's your run scoring for the day. Like, they didn't play well, but they found a way to grind out the win. They found a way to stay competitive. You can't play non-competitive games that are non-competitive in the first inning. And that's what happened yesterday. And I do think that this is probably isn't a conversation for today. There's a lot of things on the table. But as we get into the offseason and into next year, I do think we have to start talking about Miles Michaelis, because he's now going over a two-year span of not being an overly effective pitcher. And how do you just leave him in the rotation, knowing that you're basically leaving him in the rotation to have a really good performance every fourth, fifth, sixth game, and over a couple of those probably looked pretty bad? And that's where you're at right now with Michaelis. He's got something to prove here. And we'll see, you know, they've got Lance Lynn coming back. They've got a logjam of starting pitchers. That is going to be intriguing to see what they do with the rotation here before the season comes to an end. We'll continue that conversation after the 7 o'clock news. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Starting to wrap up hour number one of the program. Coming up in hour two, we'll talk a lot of college football. Missouri, Illinois, both getting wins over the weekend. Missouri up to number 6 in the AP poll. Illinois, they got a win against a ranked Kansas team, and they're receiving votes in each poll. So good things happening for college football teams in the area. And we're going to talk with a couple guests about each of those coming up next hour. I'll reiterate what I said earlier, and we'll after the 7 o'clock news, we'll open up the phone line and the text line for a little bit if you want to get in here on Cardinals baseball. But that was just not good yesterday. And when you've got so much on the line, and again, I know when I start talking like this, I immediately get tweets and text messages about, like, what are you doing talking about the playoffs? This team is not in playoff contention. Like, I understand where the team is at. And by me talking about it, I am not trying to create this false hope. I will say over and over and over that it is clearly a very bleak situation when it comes to them being a playoff team. But they're not mathematically eliminated yet. So until they're mathematically eliminated, we can continue to talk about what the path might be, no matter how unlikely the path is. And it is an incredibly unlikely path. And losing yesterday and just not even giving the team the opportunity to win. Like, they didn't play well on Saturday. What, they had the two hits or whatever? And, you know, Pedro Páez hits the home run, and that's your run scoring for the day. Like, they didn't play well, but they found a way to grind out the win. They found a way to stay competitive. You can't play non-competitive games that are non-competitive in the first inning. And that's what happened yesterday. And I do think that this is probably isn't a conversation for today. There's a lot of things on the table. But as we get into the offseason and into next year, I do think we have to start talking about Miles Michaelis, because he's now going over a 2-year span of not being an overly effective pitcher. And how do you just leave him in the rotation, knowing that you're basically leaving him in the rotation to have a really good performance every fourth, fifth, sixth game, and over a couple of those probably looked pretty bad. And that's where you're at right now with Michaelis. He's got something to prove here. And we'll see, you know, they've got Lance Lynn coming back. They've got a logjam of starting pitchers. That is going to be intriguing to see what they do with the rotation here before the season comes to an end. We'll continue that conversation after the 7 o'clock news. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that will make or break your fantasy roster, wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that really matter. We do the work so that you can just make smart decisions. Sit back and amaze your friends. Your wide receiver one won't change, but it's the nitty-gritty, it's the flex, and the waiver wire pickups. That's where your league is won or lost. So follow Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.